Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a special edition of Intelligent Medicine because we're going to take up yet another controversy. We're going to do some damage control because there a series of articles have appeared that suggest that antioxidant vitamins and supplements can interfere with the benefits of exercise. And this has got my audience in quite a stir, and I'm getting quite a few emails and questions. Here is one that is representative of that. It is from Neville. Neville writes, "Hello, Dr. Hoffman. The article below was copied from Consumer Lab. What are your thoughts? A recent study found that giving high-dose vitamin C or vitamin E to people involved in intensive exercise training blunted cellular changes thought to be important for improving muscle endurance. These and similar results recently reported with resveratrol raised concerns about high-dose antioxidant supplementation during exercise training." So here we have vitamin C and E as representative antioxidants, as well as resveratrol. Now, we tend to think of these things as being good for exercise, and now we're being told that they are bad for exercise. This is in line with a series of reports that suggest that vitamins and supplements are worthless or even worse, harmful. And we've been doing damage control on them since really a flurry of articles like this have appeared since late fall. And as a result, I'll remind you, we're doing a summit at the Hoffman Center on February 26th. For those of you in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, we're located in Midtown Manhattan, and it's going to be quite an interesting meeting where we're going to summarize some of the things that are wrong with the critiques about vitamins and supplements. And we're also going to look for an underlying theme in terms of media manipulation and a desire for greater regulatory control over supplements. That'll be on February 26th of this month at the Hoffman Center in the evening from 6 to 8. And you need to call the Hoffman Center at 212-779-1744. For information. But let's proceed with this. In the past, we have thought that antioxidant supplements are beneficial for exercise, because one of the things that happens when you exercise is that you take in a lot of oxygen. And oxygen generates free radicals, the process by which cellular rust occurs is called oxidation. And in the presence of large amounts of oxygen, which would happen during the course of a triathlon or a marathon or a heavy weightlifting training session, a lot of oxygen flows through the blood vessels and ultimately gets used up by the muscle cells. And that creates a sort of like a form of metabolic friction. And the metabolic friction creates heat. I mean, literally, you heat up, and that's why you sweat during exercise. But the byproducts of muscle metabolism generate free radicals, and we tend to think of antioxidants as free radical quenchers that will be helpful for reducing wear and tear and muscle damage and help the body to resist the overproduction of superoxides and harmful substances that are generated as byproducts of exercise. That's what's been traditionally thought. But there's some new think on this subject, and I think it's interesting, and I want to have an open mind about it. But the headlines that have been generated are, I'm going to explain to you just a few moments, are really unwarranted. But there is, in medicine and science, something called hormesis. Hormesis is spelled H-O-R-M-E-S-I-S. And it's a phenomenon by which a little bit of something that is bad for you actually turns out to be good for you. And an example of which is stress. I mean, a lot of stress, and it's debilitating, but a little bit of stress is actually kind of a wake-up call to the body. And there are even some studies that suggest that a little bit of a poison or a toxin can actually help rev up the body's defenses to a toxin. And so the theory might go like this, that a little bit of free radical formation as a result of exercise can rev up the body's repair capabilities and help the body adapt to the stress of exercise. That I'm perfectly fine with that concept, and it makes sense. So what the researchers are doing is they're taking it one step further. They're saying that by taking extraordinary amounts of antioxidants, vitamin C or vitamin E, for example, or resveratrol, which is a potent antioxidant after all, that you may, by protecting the body from free radicals, you may prevent the upregulation of the muscle mechanics or the muscle metabolism or your overall adaptation to exercise. You may interfere with this natural free radical-induced hormesis. All right? So that's the basic premise. And I'm going to read to you this article from the New York Times. Boy, the New York Times really swallows these stories, hook, line, and sinker. And I talked to somebody recently. I said, why do you think that there are so many negative articles about supplements? Is it a conspiracy? Is it a plot? And this guy's pretty into the politics of alternative medicine. And unlike some people who say there's some big, vast conspiracy where, you know, there are people who are in some public relations organization that where they're cranking out negative stories in a concerted way, he says, no, it's actually the journalistic tendency to love to report negative stuff. And after an initial romance with vitamins and supplements, it seems that the press may have turned around and now delight in reporting that all you people out there, you're a bunch of idiots because you're relying on vitamins and supplements, and here's why. So this story comes to us courtesy of Gretchen Reynolds, who is a science writer for the New York Times. Why vitamins may be bad for your workout. And she starts reiterating what the theme that I shared with you at the beginning of this podcast. Many people take vitamins as part of their daily fitness regimens, having heard that antioxidants aid physical recovery and amplify the impact of workouts. But in another example of science undercutting deeply held assumptions, several new experiments find that antioxidant supplements may actually reduce the benefits of training. And da-da-da-da-da, she talks about the free radicals, which in excess can lead to cell death and tissue damage, so it's logical that reducing the number of free radicals produced by exercise would be desirable. But then she refers to a study published in February in the Journal of Physiology. It just came out. The study was performed in Norway, and it's a small study. They, you know, it's amazing that they base these very, very sweeping conclusions on studies that are this small. 54 healthy men and women, they divided them in two. And those in one group took 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 235 milligrams of vitamin E. And members of the second group got identical placebo pills. Now, we don't know, you know, vitamin C is pretty much generic. We're okay with that. But we don't even know what type of vitamin E they got. They might have got the cheapest form of vitamin E, the dry vitamin E, alpha tocopherol succinate, tocopherol succinate, or they might have gotten alpha tocopherol, which is an oil-based form of vitamin E, but it's incomplete. And these days, we're recommending broad-spectrum vitamin E that has the four forms of vitamin E and the four forms of tocotrienols. But nonetheless, they explored the effects of vitamin E and vitamin C on these volunteers who were asked to complete a vigorous 11-week training program. And what they found, and you got to remember this, all of the volunteers were more fit than they had been at the start. Their average endurance capacity increased by about 8%. So really, when it comes down to it, they found that whether they were taking vitamin E or vitamin C or not, they still enjoyed virtually identical benefits in terms of their training, in their endurance capacity improving by 8%, which we might expect after a training program. We'll come back to that. But what they found was there was a difference because they did muscle biopsies. And they found that the ones who had taken the vitamin E and C did not have an increase in the number and size of their mitochondria. The mitochondria are tiny structures that generate energy in cells, especially in the muscles. They're the energy factories within cells. The ones who had taken the placebos had an increase in these mitochondria, and the ones who took the antioxidant vitamins did not see an increase. So that I think that that's an interesting finding. And based on that finding, what they found was that there was, based on that finding, what they infer is that the recipients of the antioxidants did not get the training benefits. But what I have to say about that is, let's come back to the original study, and I'll read you a line from the conclusion of the original study, which is entitled rather ambitiously in an overreaching way, "Vitamin C and E Supplementation Hamper Cellular Adaptation to Endurance Training." Do they really? Well, here's the bottom line. They say that C and E supplementation hampered cellular adaptations in the exercise muscles, although this was not translated to the performance tests applied in this study. I repeat, this was not translated to the performance tests applied in the study. So what they are referring to is an isolated finding on muscle biopsies, which they believe is highly significant. The mitochondria did not proliferate or expand. And they draw conclusions, I think unwarranted conclusions, that that is somehow an indication of that the antioxidants had a bad effect. Did they have a bad effect?
Well,
they didn't really have an impact on performance at all. So I think this is an example of why people get confused by nutrition research, because we're holding a microscope over cellular metabolism, and we're looking at cellular pathways in a way that sometimes is thought-provoking and hypothesis-generating. Like, that's an interesting hypothesis. Maybe the antioxidants are bad. Let's test that out more. But let's look at the real endpoints of actual performance. Let's look at, say, Olympic athletes at Sochi, and we'll give some of them antioxidants, and we'll give others no antioxidants. And we'll see if it really makes a difference in their performance on ultra-endurance events. Such as, you know, cross-country skiing for 50 kilometers. You know, will it make a difference? I bet many of these individuals are taking antioxidants, and they'd be very concerned to learn that in some ways this could shave or add a couple of seconds off their time, because we see that the winning margin in some of these events is like a half a second. It's incredible how close these finishes are. So the training edge would be very important. But so far... many athletes rely on antioxidants because at the intense levels that they work out, they generate a lot of free radicals, and they want to protect their body and their cells from damage. And I got to say this, that if antioxidants harm performance, then imagine what a great athlete I'd be, because I take a ton of antioxidants. And I'm pretty active for a 61-year-old. I run, I bike, I swim, I do weight training. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that the antioxidants that I'm taking, I take 800 international units of mixed tocopherol, vitamin E with tocotrienols daily, and I take about 2,000 of vitamin C, and I take resveratrol, which we'll cover in just a moment, and I take the full spectrum of antioxidants like alpha-lipoic acid and selenium and all the antioxidants that you find in a multivitamin. And is that holding me back? I hardly think so. I hardly think that that's causing me to not enjoy performance benefits, but I guess it'd be kind of an interesting experiment to see if my performance suddenly went through the roof when I stopped taking vitamins. I kind of doubt it, and I'm a little concerned that there would be more cellular damage. I'd have less good recovery. It's interesting to note a couple of things. One is that studies show that marathoners typically, it's a big deal, it's a lot of exertion, and marathoners typically get sick after a marathon. I think the rate of upper respiratory infections after a marathon is about one-third to one-half. A lot of people come down sick. They just kind of leave it all out on the running course, and they're exhausted, and their immune system collapses, and they get sick. They get a cold or a respiratory infection. And it's been shown that by taking vitamin C, by preloading with vitamin C before the event, that you can dramatically reduce the incidence of post-race upper respiratory infections. That's in the scientific literature. So suggesting a protective effect of vitamin C. And we know that vitamin C protects against exercise-induced asthma, because the lungs, when they take in a lot of oxygen, particularly when the air is cold, the bronchioles tend to cringe and constrict, and it makes breathing tough for some individuals who are prone to asthma. Vitamin C attenuates that exercise-induced asthma. It does something, you know, maybe by quenching the free radicals that trigger that response, it does something to reduce the asthmatic response to exercise or exercise-induced asthma, EIA as it's sometimes referred to. Also, exercisers often take protein drinks with whey protein before or after exercise. And there are various schools of thought on, is it better to take it before? Is it better to take it after? You take a little before and you take a little after. There's a whole rocket science approach to this among exercise physiologists. And the answer is it's not really been quite resolved, the timing of administration of whey protein. But keep in mind that whey protein is rich in amino acid building blocks for something called glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. And so a big issue with exercises, particularly, and I'll tell you, as an older exerciser, the big issue is recovery. You know, you can have a big, tough workout, but in order to sustain high levels of performance, you don't want to have like a big workout on Saturday and then, you know, you're crippled. You know, your muscles are so sore, you feel so exhausted and achy that you can't work out until the next week. Muscle recovery is a big issue, and many athletes rely on glutathione or whey protein products to facilitate muscle recovery. Many of these muscle recovery products contain antioxidants. So now let us turn our attention to the resveratrol question, because my listener also stated that these and similar results recently are reported with resveratrol raised concern about high-dose antioxidant supplementation during exercise training. And indeed, the Times article says that there's even more evidence that antioxidants are bad, and then they cite the resveratrol study. Now, interestingly, both these studies come from a relatively obscure journal. It's not the Journal of the American Medical Association. It's not Science. It's not Lancet. It's called the Journal of Physiology. Journal of Physiology, which not a very well-known journal, but just, you know, a scientific journal nonetheless. And the article in the Journal of Physiology prompted a lot of headlines that were unwarranted. Headlines such as this: red wine blunts benefits of exercise in men. Well, you know, clearly, whenever I you know, drink a lot of Chablis during my exercise, it definitely blunts the effects of exercise and the benefits, because I just feel like falling off my bicycle and kind of, you know, it's pulling up a chair and chilling. So that's actually an inaccurate headline, because the study that they referred to did not look at the effects of red wine. It looked at the effects of resveratrol. Another one comes from Science Daily. Too many antioxidants? Resveratrol blocks many cardiovascular benefits of exercise. The Express, a British newspaper, writes, glass of red could undo the effects of exercising. Once again, get it wrong, because it wasn't about red wine. It was about resveratrol. And all right, so what's the deal here? Well, you know, clearly, I suspect a bit of a campaign to challenge resveratrol as a beneficial substance in keeping with an overall agenda to discredit nutritional supplements. I'm just saying, because we're just seeing it's like a drumbeat of negative stories about supplements. And part of it may be that they're trying to convert resveratrol into a drug. They're trying to improve on Mother Nature and tweak it and turn it into a patent medication that is supercharged resveratrol. This is part of an initiative by a major pharmaceutical company that has already spent well over $750 million on resveratrol research. You know, selling resveratrol in health food stores is one thing, but you've got to patent a variant of resveratrol, chemically tweaked version of it, to patent it and make a lot of money and have exclusivity in marketing for many years. And so there's been a fair amount of misinformation about natural resveratrol, claiming that it just doesn't work. And that's why science has to come up with a new, improved version of it that improves on Mother Nature. But what about the study itself? What does the study say? Well, the problem with the study is, and I'm not, I'm quoting some researchers who take the position that this study in the Journal of Physiology is in direct contrast to what would be predicted based on the beneficial effects of resveratrol supplementation during exercise training, which is repeatedly shown in preclinical models. In other words, they've done the research, and most of the research suggests that resveratrol would be beneficial during exercise. So they're saying, how could it be that your study shows it's no good when a lot of other studies show that it's beneficial? And this is a critique that you can find at Resveratrol News, resveratrolnews.com. And one of the writers is my good colleague Bill Sardi, S-A-R-D-I. So let's attribute that to its originator. He does some great resveratrol reporting. What they did in this study is they gave resveratrol to individuals, and they measured cholesterol and blood pressure and blood sugar and a bunch of stuff. And what they found, and I think they really tended to distort the data. Now, let me just say parenthetically that it's really hard for you as a healthcare consumer to cut through all this fog, because you have to read the studies, and that is, number one, it's very boring. Number two, it's very confusing. And number three, you have to really have a trained scientific and statistical mind to properly critique studies. So these scientists, however, say, we believe that their conclusion that resveratrol might induce a strong adverse effect on cardiovascular responses to exercise is too strong and an over-interpretation of the data. What does the data show? Well, the data shows that with both groups, the group that was taking resveratrol and the group that was not taking resveratrol, cholesterol went down, but they say that it went down more, but just a little bit, in the people who didn't take the resveratrol. So their conclusion is that the resveratrol blunted the benefits of exercise. Well, the numbers are pretty close here. Very close. And the blood pressure is the same. Is blood pressure reductions were not as great in those who did take the resveratrol as those who were taking the resveratrol. But they both saw improvements in their blood pressure. So it wasn't if resveratrol abolished the blood pressure improving effect of exercise. And the researchers point out, and this is, I mean, I would have to rely on experts to help me interpret this study, because, you know, this stuff is very technical, very confusing. They say, quote, a litany of intramuscular outcomes related to vascular function and inflammation were evaluated, and none seems to indicate any adverse effect of resveratrol supplementation, further detracting from the conclusion that exercise-derived benefits were abolished. And they talk about several other issues, raise concerns about potential overinterpretation of data and the broad sweeping conclusions that resveratrol is no good. And, you know, it's really technical here. I'm not going to, you know, get into the weeds with you on this. But they point out something really interesting, and I wouldn't have caught this. They say perhaps the most surprising aspect of the findings in this study that shows that resveratrol is no good for exercise was a major omission. They omitted sharing the fact, which is buried within a table showing the data, that resveratrol actually improved performance on the step test. Both groups, the resveratrol supplemented group and the non-resveratrol supplemented group, took a step test to demonstrate exercise performance increments. And the ones who took resveratrol did better than the ones who took placebo. And they say this is a surprising omission, given that this test was described as a test of maximum functional capacity, and notably, this result can only be found within a supplementary table. They had to dig. I mean, this takes time, folks, to pick apart some of these articles. It's almost like a sub-specialty skill within medicine and science, the ability to read a study and properly critique it. They say, and this is a little snarky language here, we can only speculate on the rationale behind the decision not to report this important finding in the main document. But this omission raises some questions regarding the objectivity of the data interpretation. So the conclusion of this letter to the editor in the Journal of Physiology, critiquing the resveratrol article, is, as a result of the points raised above, we believe that the strongly worded statements that resveratrol blunted, and they put it in quotes, blunted or abolished in quotes, the beneficial effects of exercise are likely to be inappropriate. And they say that we still need to do future clinical trials to answer such questions and inform public health recommendations related to resveratrol use. And I think that that's an important statement. We are poisoning the well for earnest, well-meaning supplement takers who want to improve their health and improve their ability to exercise well into their golden years by protecting themselves with antioxidant nutrients. Another of the problems with the resveratrol study is that the resveratrol used in the study wasn't even really the right kind of resveratrol. They used the study employed a synthetic form of resveratrol that wasn't stabilized, and it was presented in the form of a hard compressed tablet. It's known that resveratrol is known to degrade when exposed to light, heat, and oxygen, and this may explain why the synthetic resveratrol in the study did not really work. So the resveratrol we use, by the way, it's a product called Longevinex, and it's the product that is advocated by Bill Sardi, who is one of the contributors to Resveratrol News. Now, look, you could say, well, Bill Sardi, he's on the payroll of the resveratrol people. He promotes resveratrol, so of course he's going to defend resveratrol in the face of evidence that it's not that good. But he's an earnest and sincere individual, and the resveratrol hypothesis is alive and well, and the antioxidant hypothesis, in my opinion, for exercisers is alive and well. And what I would say is that we need to study this more, but we also need to avoid rushing to judgment and reporting facile conclusions in major newspapers, which deter researchers from doing the right kind of research going forward, and also deter consumers from accessing supplements that clearly could be beneficial. I, for one, will not stop using my antioxidant nutrients based on these studies. I mean, look, I saw the headlines. I read it with interest. I said, gee, I mean, I'm as interested in anyone as, you know, every year I want to improve my time on the triathlon that I do. It's a standard course. It's always the same distance. And, I at the end of the race, I check the time and I said, gee, I'm doing better. I'm doing worse. Or at the very least, halt the inevitable process of performance decline that occurs with aging. I mean, talk about intimations of aging. Here in New York, we just had a sad story. Derek Jeter, the perennial kid of the Yankees. I remember when he was a rookie and really an iron man in the infield, never missed the game for so many years. Now plagued with injuries, slowed down, hitting that advanced age of, wait for it, 40. Oh my goodness, he's 40. An old man in the sport of baseball. He's slowing down, and now he's going to retire after the 2014 season. You know, obviously we want to push back against aging and physical deterioration. And I think that supplements like resveratrol and the antioxidants maybe provide us with the key towards extending our exercise careers. All right, much of this is going to be grist for the mill and more because we're going to talk about lots of the anti-supplement propaganda that's been hitting the airwaves and been hitting our print media over the past few months. We'll talk about that in an upcoming emergency summit. That's how we bill it at the Hoffman Center, coming up on Wednesday, February 26th. Call the Hoffman Center for information and reservations. We'll have a lot more to say to you when you see us then. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine. And she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine Podcasts.